Welcome to Table Talk. Pull up a chair and have a seat as Pastor Brent Kuhlman and myself, Pastor Scott Porath, continue in our study, which we've named Islam 101.
That's right.
Yeah, it was a great time last week, and we have our special guest back again this week, Dr. Adam Francisco. Dr. Francisco, glad to have you on board again.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Dr. Francisco is a professor at Concordia University,
right.
Irvine, California. Mm-hmm. So we have him on the phone. And where we want to jump in today, as we're looking at Islam 101, is with the five pillars of Islam. So, Doctor, would you first of all just list those five pillars, and then maybe we can go through them one by one and talk about them a little more specifically.
Okay. Well, the first and perhaps the most important is the confession of faith, or the Shahada. The second, and it's a brief sentence, it simply says, there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger. Second is the Salat, which are the five compulsory prayers that a Muslim is to perform each day at prescribed times using prescribed formulas. The third is zakat, which is not the equivalent, but is sort of like the notion of the tithe in Christianity. It's an offering, it's a compulsory offering that every Muslim is, if they're to be a good Muslim, is to give. Fourth is saum, which is fasting during Ramadan. And observing fasting during Ramadan, and the last would be the Hajj, or the prescribed pilgrimage that every Muslim is to take at least once in their life if they're able to afford it.
Okay, let's go back to that first pillar then. The creed, if you will, of Islam, the confession of the faith. I notice it's a little bit shorter than the Athanasian Creed.
A little bit.
Just a little bit. Is this a creed that is said daily, regularly? Is this a creed of initiation into the religion? How is it used?
There are a couple different ways. Those who come into Islam from something else, some other religion or belief system, what marks them as a Muslim, the initial step, is the confession of the Shahada, preferably in Arabic, before two adult Muslim males. You're considered a member of the community once that's accomplished, or once that's said. Now, that's not the only time, of course, that you say the Shahada. There are, really devout Muslims will recite it often throughout the day, but usually their prayers and other rituals are preceded with the Shahada. And there is there's a long discussion in historical Muslim literature on as many would describe it, the deep theology or the deep logic behind the Shahada. It doesn't seem, for example, Martin Luther once commented that the Shahada is almost like a tautology. To say that there is no God but God is like saying God is God. But Muslims would say that it's, in saying there is no God but Allah, what you're saying is that there's nothing worthy of attaching yourself to, certainly no other religion or idol, but there's no political ideology, no moral system or philosophy that's worth pursuing, but that which is given by Allah and the Quran and the traditions.
So it's totally exclusive.
Absolutely. Totally exclusive and, I might add, all-encompassing.
Yeah. Hey, Adam, does when Muslims say Allah, is that the equivalent to our saying God as Christians?
That's a big question. In the semantic level, Allah literally means in Arabic the God, or maybe a better way of putting it would be the Creator. You will find Christians who, Arabic speaking Christians, who will sometimes refer to God as Allah. More often than not, though, they, in order to avoid the theological problems that are immediately come to the fore, they will refer to God as Rab or Lord or something like that to distinguish the Christian God from the God of Islam. So semantically, they're the same. Theologically, absolutely not.
Okay.
That's where our problem lies, is that in what we mean when we say Allah. Do we mean the God who is three persons in one being, or the one essence of God that's also one in person of, in Islam? Radically different conceptions of God.
Got another question here. What's the Muslim view of the Christian Trinity?
Well, they absolutely reject the Trinity. There's a Quranic passage, chapter 4, verse 171, that in addressing Christians, it says, you infidels, do not go to the extreme in your religion. That is, don't add to religion or add to the theology that's been given through the prophets, especially Muhammad, and do not say three or do not confess the Trinity. One could translate it like that.
Uh-huh.
Now, there are other places in the Quran where the Trinity is discussed a little bit, and it seems that Muhammad or whoever put the Quran together after Muhammad's death thought that the Christian doctrine of the Trinity was a form of tritheism, and included in those three gods, there's not only God the Father and God the Son, Jesus, but then there's a third God, and that's not the Holy Spirit, that's Mary.
Yeah.
There are, again, there's historical Muslim literature that helps explain that a bit. They say that in the way Christians treat Mary, probably directing attention to the Roman Catholic tradition, they treat Mary or they elevate Mary to such an extent that she's in some sense seen as a deity.
You said that sometimes a Christian Arab might use the term Allah. How about vice versa? Does a Muslim, when he refers to God, always use Allah, or will he use terms like God or Lord?
Yeah, really good question. What I can tell you based on a lot of observation that in a Islamic context where you have primarily just Muslims, say at a mosque or something, they'll use the term Allah. When it's to a broader audience, for example, you know, in these Christian-Muslim so-called dialogues or compromises or any other sort of interfaith gathering, Muslims will refer to God in the English.
And why might they use that kind of language in that kind of context?
Well, certainly some find it just more, it's just easier for the conversation, but I'm having watched many Muslim apologists, what they use that word to sort of draw people along, to help convince others that Allah is equivalent to the Christian or the Jewish or whatever conception of God. So it's a sort of an apologetic, you might say, ploy to, as the Quran puts it in chapter 3, to call others to Islam.
Adam, I should have done a little bit of homework, and so I'm just working from memory here. But I'm remembering the prayer service, the interfaith service at Yankee Stadium following September 11th. Mm-hmm. And there were a variety of different clergy there who were involved. And if I remember correctly, the imam got up, and before he said his prayer, I believe he recited the creed. Would that be typical, and what would be the purpose of doing that before a prayer in that context?
Yes, I don't remember the details myself either, but that seems to come to mind, that he either pronounced the Shahada or he started with a Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Merciful, the Just. And they will oftentimes do that as if to dedicate what they're about to say, or to invoke the name, even though Allah is not a name, but to invoke Allah in their speech. So what he's saying following that is seen as part of, at least in whatever the imam's name was, part part and parcel of the Islamic message. It wasn't a, you know, the Muslim audience hearing that would know he's not speaking from some sort of interfaith ecumenical perspective.
Well, I'm going to ask the obvious question, but it needs to be asked, or at least repeated then. Because a lot of the people that we serve in our congregations and in our communities that we know who are Christian, they have a false view that we Christians and Muslims all pray to the same God. I've heard this numerous times, but that's not the case, is it?
No. I don't know how. I mean, I can understand the person who hasn't looked into anything and to any sort of even superficial detail. Could maybe think that because, you know, we throw around the word God very loosely. But if you look at this, even if you just pop and open up a Quran or some other sort of classic Islamic literature, it's very clear that they're directing their prayers to a not only the God that's not the Christian God, but a God that denounces Christianity. You could say that the so-called revelation in the Quran is inherently anti-Christian, in that you find the Quran rejecting that Jesus died and therefore that he rose from the dead. You know, Paul says if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, Christianity is false. But you also find denunciation of Christian beliefs, and you find in Quran chapter 5, 116 through 117 that Jesus, in the Islamic conception, comes back at the end of time. And denounces Christians for their false beliefs. So I don't know how people get there. I kind of think, to put the best construction on it, that they just haven't really thought much about it. But the problem is exacerbated when you get so-called Christian leaders and theologians who haven't done any homework either, or who are at least afraid to make distinctions.
Yeah.
Well, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left here on this first half. So let's go on to the second pillar then. And this was Salah, did you say? Prayer?
Salah, yeah. Okay. Prayer. Every Muslim, but you can, for example, in a family, the husband or a man can perform this on behalf of their wife and their children too, at least in some Islamic communities. But it's every day, there are 5 times. And it changes depending on the position of the moon and the rising of the sun each day. There are 5 times that you're to pray. At best case scenario, you'll go to the mosque and direct your prayers towards Mecca, which they call the Qibla, the direction of prayer. Now, that is, if you spend much time with Muslims, you'll notice that they don't really do that. So it's kind of become a popular belief that you're to at least, or do it on Friday, whereas the rest of the week, if you can, you do, but they've kind of gotten liberal on that, you might say.
So instead of a Christmas and Easter Christian, you have a Friday Muslim.
Right. Yeah, I've not seen that term anywhere, but that's a good way of putting it.
I'm going to copyright that.
It's interesting, though, for Christians, you know, we've always followed a prayer of morning and evening, you know, flowing from the Old Testament. And so in the small catechism, we have the morning prayer, we have the evening prayer, we have the prayers before our meals. So I point that out because we Christians have this, for lack of a better term, the discipline of prayer, which, of course, is the exercise of our faith. And I bring this up, too, because as we go through these pillars, I want to emphasize, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but all 5 of these pillars are based, to use our language, it's a salvation by works, isn't it?
Through and through. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. I wanted to make that clear, too.
Yeah. I don't know if we talked about this last time, but Luther one time wrote, after he had investigated Islam a bit, because he's concerned about it, that if there's a religion of works righteousness out there, that if one wanted to be completely consistent, it wasn't Roman Catholicism, it was Islam, or he called it Mohammedanism back then. It's the works righteousness religion par excellence.
Okay. And so, you know, to put that in a theological framework then, you know, a Muslim who is feeling terribly guilty about his sins might be a little bit more adamant in his prayers.
Yeah.
Well, folks...
Absolutely.
We're gonna take a little bit of break here, and we'll come back and we'll look at the other three pillars of Islam.